province alumni coordinators appointed on a trial basis. On the national level, Brother Heath was a candidate for both national collegiate representative at the 1994 National Convention and national vice president in 2003. After that time, he was chair of the National Music Advocacy Committee from 2009 to 2015. During that time, he led the compilation of a national document and has presented on the topic in provinces 20, 17, and 30. He has served as a trustee of the SEF since 2012 and served as secretary from 2014 to 2019. In his professional life, he is currently employed in the field of educational leadership, having earned a doctorate in educational leadership from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Prior to this, he was a K-12 music educator, having earned a bachelor's degree from Eastern Carolina University and a master's degree from Appalachian State University. All right. Sorry, I'm from Michigan. Outside of this, he also spends time with Stonewall Sports of Raleigh, which I had to look up, but it sounds like an amazing organization that all brothers should look into. Brother Heath, with your permission, is it okay if I share the link within the chat today?
Sure.
Wonderful. Brother Heath serves on a local outreach committee and will be co-chairing a national summit in July of 2021. Brother Heath also contributes regularly to the Phi Mu Alpha R&D group on Facebook. He has spent countless hours researching the history of our fraternity, which led him to the subject of today's talk, which is the Alpha Chapter, A Closer Look. Without further ado, please help me welcome Brother John Heath.
All right. Thank you, Dave. And thank you for organizing this opportunity for us. We were just on a Province 20 CPR reunion a little while ago, reminiscing on some of the past CPR convocations and our memories from that. So it's this time of year, it's always a good opportunity to connect. And in fact, years ago, this used to be the time of year when they would have national conventions, interestingly enough. So, hello, everybody. I think I know most everyone here. Kevin, I don't believe I know you. We may have crossed. Where are you from? Dr. Perrone.
Oh, you're currently muted, Dr. Perrone.
I'm muted. Thank you. Yes, I was distracted. I was actually still trying on the My Symphonia website to figure out what resources are there to help me stay engaged as an alumni, and I'm fortunately have found nothing. So forgive my lack of attention. My alumni alma mater affiliation is with Alpha Nu. As you know, that chapter does no longer exist. Although I did work at Ball State University for quite some time, and before I went into counseling psych, and I was involved with Delta Lambda chapter. So right now I am living in Indiana.
All right, it's good to meet you.
It's good to meet you too.
Thank you. Keith and Aaron and Bill I've known for a number of years. Keith was here in North Carolina for a while. Aaron, I think I met at a leadership institute back in the 90s. Bill I've known for a while. And Bill, thank you for your information you sent in preparation for this presentation. Kevin I've known for a while, probably about 25 years from my years in Texas. Andrew, I don't believe I know you. I don't think we've met before.
Hey, I'm from the Sigma Nu chapter. I was just initiated this past, was it September? Brother Friday was our presider. That was really cool. Yeah.
It was a little colder out than September.
Yeah.
I would say it was probably about November.
Right. It's good to meet you. Where is Sigma Nu located?
Rochester Hills, Oakland.
Oakland University, located in Rochester and Auburn Michigan. Hills in Michigan.
All right. It was good to meet you. Yeah, John Peter.
Nice to meet you too.
Thank you. John Peter, I've known for a few years. I think we met in New Orleans, and he also contributed some feedback to the presentation tonight. So thank you for that. Eric, see, you're from Murray State. That's Price Doyle's territory. Are you currently an alumnus, or are you still a collegiate member?
Hi. Yeah, I'm an alumni. Previously, I was... Well, I've been multiple offices for Gamma Delta at Murray State. I was the faculty advisor for a while, moved jobs, So once they found out I was leaving, they made me arrow instead. So I've been here a while.
Okay. All right. It's really good to meet you. And at some point I have a, you may have seen it. There's a dissertation on Price of Doyle that you may have, you may find of interest in some of the brothers there. You don't hear his name as much anymore, unfortunately, but there's a lot of good information. Yes. Just remind me to get that to you.
That would be great.
Yeah, I'll be sure to get that for you. Gordon, I've known for a number of years. I certainly appreciate all of Gordon's feedback and input. And JD, I think we've met once or twice, maybe at national convention. So it's really good to see you. All right, so I'm going to start the presentation and I'm going to share screen. And since we have a smaller group, I have down here 9:40 as far as the time for comments and questions. So let's just kind of bypass that at this point. If you just want to put it in the chat. And Dave, if you could let me know if there's a comment or a question. All right, so this is going to be a brief overview of Alpha Chapter during the first 25 years. I have interest in a lot of historical aspects of the fraternity. The songbook, I've done research and done presentations on that in our province workshop. I've done histories of chapters in my home province of Province 20. I've always been very interested in the careers of some of the mid-century leadership like Harry Wilson and Price Doyle and Peter Dykema and others. But this is something that I felt like we don't hear a lot about. We do hear about, you know, the first few years of Alpha Chapter. We hear about key personnel like Mills, Percy Jewett Burrell, Frank Leslie Stone, George Chadwick, a little bit about George Chadwick. But this tends to be an overlooked aspect of fraternity history. So I'm going to try to steer clear of, there's not going to be a lot of historical information about Mills himself or about Burrell per se. I like to think of this more as more Mandalorian than Skywalker saga, if that makes any sense. It's not comprehensive. It's going to primarily focus on highlights from those first 20 years or so. You know, I think sometimes we have perceptions about Alpha Chapter, about what it was like, what, you know, the dynamics were and so forth. And some of the information that I've found kind of presents, at least to me, somewhat of a different picture. Opportunity to discuss maybe some unanswered questions. And I certainly want to encourage everybody to come to their own conclusions about what we cover. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to spin kind of narrative. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody. I just want to present the information that I found and let everybody kind of come to their own conclusions on that. And again, if you have any questions or comments, just go ahead and put those in the chat. And Dave, just let me know if something comes up. And I know that Bill and John Peter have shared some information. If there's something that, or anybody, if there's something that pops into your mind that you feel like is relevant to what we're discussing, please go ahead and share that. And also I ask that everybody respect each other's perspectives. Again, I'm not here to, I have no agenda. I just want to present the information. So let's just bear that in mind. First of all, previous perceptions about early years of Alpha Chapter. The one thing that comes to my mind is that old recruitment video that we used to have about 25 or 30 years ago, where it was kind of like in a cartoon type format or slideshow format. They go into George Chadwick's office and he's sitting there smoking his pipe and, you know, I have a suggestion for you boys. Back in my day at Leipzig, we had a group called the Sinfonia. And my perception of George Chadwick was always, he was a stodgy old man smoking his pipe. And he probably did smoke a pipe or a cigar, but in learning about his background and his life, you know, he had two young kids at the time. He was not as old at that time as I always kind of, you know, thought he might be. So that was one kind of preconceived notion that I had. Another thing that I learned as I went through the history of the New England Conservatory is a lot of the campus higher educational issues that we sometimes deal with today, some of those things were common back then. Part of the reason why they moved from the second location to the third present location is because George Chadwick didn't want to be in the dormitory business, which I thought was kind of interesting. Anybody else have any previous notions or misconceptions or whatnot about what Alpha Chapter was like during those first few years?
If so, toss them into the chat.
Anyone share anything?
I will share my perspective if nobody else has one. I interpreted the majority of the Alpha Chapter as a bunch of old white guys.
And I think it was, for the most part. I could be wrong, but I think you're right. Anyone else?
Yeah, sorry, had to move the mic away. Not old white guys, but young, fairly well off, very well educated, not the norm. Upper middle class white guys, not the average Joe. The I have a good job kind of people.
And you mentioned that there's something interesting that we'll get to that I found very, very eye-opening along those lines. Anybody else? Okay. Go ahead.
We have from Brother Rudd over at Murray State University. He said, I think especially the younger guys see the Alpha Chapter as older philosophical musicians.
And to some extent, but I've kind of discovered a different side of them as well, as we'll see. Anything else? All right. So unanswered questions, we'll kind of save that part to later. Want to move down now. And why is this not? For some reason, I can't move my. Here we go.
There it goes.
All right, so these are some sources that I used in putting this information together. And anyone that wants to learn more about this time period, these are all very good resources. Of course, Dr. Underwood's Centennial History, he doesn't cover a whole lot about Alpha Chapter outside of, you know, the standard material we cover in learning about the early history. He did provide some information when he wrote the book that was not previously known. But again, there's not as much of it as there is. Obviously, there's a good bit of material. You know, more has come to light since he wrote the book. The list of honorary members of Sinfoni was compiled by Thomas Larimore. And thank you, Keith, for finding this in the archives for me a few years ago and sending it to me. Very fascinating document. You could do a presentation or two on that document alone. Some Chadwick biographies that are listed. The Sinfonia Birthday, which was the play that was written by Burrell for a convention. We're not sure if it was actually performed, but it does provide some insight into those early years. And Dr. Underwood referenced that in his history book. John Mongiovi wrote the book several years ago on Mills, and I think he has another one planned on Percy Jewett Burrell at some point. Book called Music in Boston covered, you know, that period, some of the classical composers and the Boston Symphony and so forth. Life and Letters of Henry Lee Higginson. He was the founder of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and he was a national honorary member. That book provides some good context surrounding Carl Muck, who was the Boston Symphony Orchestra conductor that was initiated as a national honorary and only to be expelled 2 to 3 years later. Evening at Symphony, which was a history of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The early chapters of that book also discuss Higginson, Carl Muck, and then also some Boston Symphony Orchestra conductors that were Sinfonians. Measure by Measure is a very insightful history of the New England Conservatory. A lot of good context for the early years of the chapter and the growth of the conservatory itself. And also for me, it kind of provided some perspective on, in the 1970s, when the chapter lost its room. These are some related events in Boston prior to 1898. There was the Handel and Haydn Society that was formed, the Boston Music Academy that was formed under the leadership of Lowell Mason. Two of his grandsons went on to be Alpha Honorary members. The Harvard Musical Association, opening of Boston Music Hall, which is now known, interestingly enough, as the Orpheum Theater. And this was the first location for the conservatory. Birth of Chadwick in 1854. The founding of the conservatory in 1867. The National Peace Jubilee, of which Chadwick was a participant when he was younger. Mills moves to Boston. Chadwick returns to Boston. Founding of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. This was one of those things that kind of helped contribute to the musical culture of Boston and kind of contributing to the musical mecca that it was. The NEC moved to the former St. James Hotel. And I'm going to share a video here. Hopefully it comes through all right. That was the St. James Hotel, as it appeared in the 1980s drama St. Elsewhere. Does anyone remember St. Elsewhere? A few people? And that was, of course, the campus where the founding was actually founded. I think today it is a condo. They've renovated it into condos, and I think the original ballroom, sleeper hall, can be rented out for weddings and conferences and events. So it gives you an idea of that. Chadwick, he was an organist. I'm sorry that, I'm gonna try to move the pictures. Is there a way to do that?
Which pictures are you referring to?
The participants.
Yeah, they can be moved either over to the side or to the bottom if you simply click and drag.
All right, there we go.
Perfect.
Can everybody still see the document okay?
Yes, we've been able to see the document. We all have our own participants on our own screens. We can't actually see your participants on your screen.
Okay. All right. So, as I mentioned, Chadwick was an organist at a couple of churches in Boston. He started at the NEC in 1882, was there for almost 50 years. Mentioned Mills holding the prayer meetings and the flower missions that we're familiar with. Eben Torji died 1891 prior to Sinfonia's founding. Interestingly enough, his daughter participated in an event that was sponsored by this chapter later on. Chadwick became director of the NEC in 1897, less than a year before Sinfonia Club was founded. 1898, I've listed some events that we're familiar with from the our publications about the early history. 1899, Percy Burrell was initiated, and there is a Wikipedia article that I contributed some to it. John Mongiovi did as well, and I've got the link there if you'd like to take a look at that at some point. 1900, there was dozens of chapter honoraries at Alpha. Some of them are very obscure to this day, but some of them have interesting connections that we'll see as we go forward. Louis E. Elson is known as the composer of Student Life. He authored works on history of American music, and he described the NEC as the most important factor of all in making Boston the musical center of this country. And he is one of those names that he was very involved with Alpha in the early years. He attended some national conventions. But his is one of those names I feel maybe should be given a little bit more exposure, so to speak. A couple of more names there, the honoraries. John Wallace Goodrich. I think I've seen his name in a publication maybe a handful of times. He was Chadwick's successor when Chadwick retired in 1931, and he stayed on as director until 1942. He actually served on the committee with Dykema regarding the national anthem, which was, and I think there's a misconception about that committee. It was not like a federal committee or a nationally endorsed committee. I think it was under the auspices of MTNA or what's now NAFME. He served as a judge for Fraternity National Composition Contest. And he also participated in national conventions of that time frame. And into the years he served as director. So another name I feel like maybe should get a little bit more exposure. The expansion efforts that we're familiar with in October 1900. The first national convention, as we know, was held in 1901. And it's very interesting, this article, and granted, I know this was public, newspapers, it was not fraternity publications, but it is interesting to see here, this comment, it is a fact that men are more and more turning toward music as a profession, and hence the opportunity to organize and maintain a club in Boston's noted conservatory was seized and turned to good advantage. So it's talking about music as a profession and professionalism, within 3 years of the founding. Then we have several names. Of course, Chadwick was there. He was involved. See if there's any other names in that particular article. And again, it says, as only men making music a profession will be sought for memberships. I thought that was very interesting. And again, I'm not trying to prove a point. I just thought it was interesting. Alpha Chapter reception that was held in December 1901. And this was a chapter event there. This is still at the St. James campus. And you see some names there. And I'll make this available at some point afterwards, so anybody would like to look at the articles more in depth. 1902, I found two separate situations where there was a minstrel show. The chapter participated in a minstrel show. I know that's has not really been discussed. I think I've seen one mention of it maybe in the R&D group or somewhere. But that was, a reality. And I apologize, I'm not able to.
John, there's been a request in the chat from a little bit earlier to release this document after the presentation tonight. Yes. If and when you are willing to release the document, brothers will be able to go in and click on all of the links if you're not able to get it to work out okay.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. About the minstrel show, I know that that is something that is, it is concerning that is, particularly this year with all of the, the conversations that have been held about race and being honest about our history, not just as fraternity, but as a country, and especially here in the South. I think it presents an opportunity to be, honest about our history. And I hope that at some point, either on the national level or as brothers feel led to do, that we'll be able to have those conversations. 1902, the present campus opened at Huntington Avenue. One thing I sometimes hear is, brothers will go to Boston or the New England Conservatory and say, well, there's nothing left from the fraternity. I can't find anything on the fraternity. Well, true, there is nothing on a door or a plaque or in an exhibit or anything like that about the fraternity. But if you dig deeper and think about the personalities that were involved at that time, Jordan Hall was named for Eben Jordan Jr., who was a philanthropist. He was heir to the Jordan Marsh department store chain. he and his wife attended quite a number of chapter events during those early years. And there's also an ensemble room that's named for him as well. And again, his name, I think with some of the writing that John Mongiovi has done, his name has kind of come, you see his name a little bit more recently. George Corlew was initiated in 1903 as a chapter honorary and on the Larimore list of national honoraries. His is the earliest in the category of national honorary members. And again, he was someone that he wasn't like, you know, some of these you see that they become an honorary and they get their pin and their shingle and you never hear from them again. He was involved somewhat. His wife attended some of the concerts. In fact, his son pledged it at Alpha Chapter in 1914. So that's just an article about his initiation in 1903. Mills became Supreme President again in 1904. Production of the Priscilla operetta. This Pretty Girls of Plenty of Those, an interesting headline. And this was, the assembly was like a formal dance or like a cotillion that was held. And I think this was an annual event. And again, you see names like Mrs. George Chadwick, Mrs. Wallace Goodrich, Mrs. Eben Jordan, you know, some of these big name honoraries, and their wives were supporters, and they were, you know, very present at some of these early events.
So we do have a question, John, from the chat, if you would, from Keith Hoffman. He asks, it's interesting to see some of these things were posted in, I assume, local newspapers, or were they the college paper?
This is like the Boston Globe.
Wow.
City newspapers. And I've even seen an article from the New York Times, Beta Gamma Chapter Columbia, where they were listing the time and location of the ritual, which I thought was kind of
odd. Boy.
I don't know if anybody showed up, but National Convention in 1907, that's when Burrell was elected Supreme President. And let me see. Okay, so this was, all right, yeah, so this was two operettas that were presented at the National Convention. And these were actual women. I have found articles about shows where men portrayed women. And John Peter kind of shared some background on that with me earlier, and I just thought that was interesting. There's, let's see, Holiday in Jail, and I'm going to kind of skim through some of this so we can cover more of it. Holiday in Jail. This was a musical travesty by Percy Jewett Burrell, which was presented in 1909. It was a fundraiser for scholarships. And this, it would be interesting to find this. And again, look here, Chadwick, Jordan, some of these, Goodrich again, they were very supportive. They were very supportive of chapter events.
John, I find something interesting in many of these articles that I see. The Sinfonia Club is occasionally referred to as a Greek letter organization and occasionally referred to as a fraternity. I can understand their use of the word fraternity, but given that there were no Greek letters attached to the organization at that time, do you know if they were alluding to something that they assumed would happen?
And I think this is more, you know, the newspapers themselves, depending on whoever they're interviewing for the articles. And that's why I kind of have to take these with a grain of salt to an extent, because they are written by reporters and newspaper editors. It's kind of hard to say. I think the chapter designation was started in 1903 when the first national convention was held, is my perception. All right, so in 1909, Corlew was on campus, and there was a reception held in his honor. And this is where I noticed Mrs. Eben Jordan was present. I'm assuming I'm thinking Torgy, his daughter, was there. So, and again, see some of these same names of supporters. Here goes Our Wives. And here we go. Raymond Simmons, he portrayed Mrs. Chandler. Betty Blair was portrayed by Chester Cook. Julie was portrayed by George Webster. This is very interesting. I think Burrell conduct or was the producer of this event. All right. All right. So F. Otis Drayden, he was initiated in 1912. And interestingly, he was, you know, future Supreme President. He's the one that resigned. He took a government position, resigned at some point, I believe, during World War I. He wrote the lyrics to On and Ever Upward. And he actually came back into national leadership sometime later, which I thought was interesting. And it's, you know, I've always wondered, you know, when we talk about, you know, the changes in direction, the fraternity, the changes, you know, the object, the purpose statement and so forth, you know, did he ever make any comments about the changes for or against, or did he just kind of see it as, you know, the natural progression of things? And, you know, I don't know, but it's just something that kind of that comes to mind. See, there's another minstrel show that was documented in 1912. And there may have been more. That's you know, the two that I was able to locate. All right, so here's the 1912 convention. You see Mills, you see Burrell, F. Otis Drayden. And it talks about down here some of the events associated with that particular convention. And I found it interesting. Of course, you know, Chadwick participated in the events. There was a National Committee on Music Education and Legislation appointed. So I thought that was interesting too. And I guess you could look at it from an advocacy perspective, but you know, some might see it, you know, from a professionalism perspective. World War One got started in Europe in 1914. George Cortelyou's son, Winthrop Cortelyou, was a brother. He pledged in 1914, and he and Otis Drayden collaborated. I haven't really been able to find a lot about him. It'd be interesting to see if there is more, but here you see some of the background on Otis Drayden, and it talks about how they were both active members. So that's not something you see every day. A national honor is particularly somebody of Cortelyou's stature, and then his son ends up pledging. All right, so the annual Alpha Chapter Banquet. All right, something I thought was interesting, there were other Greek letter organizations on campus. At one point, there was something called the Hellenic Society, where Phi Mu Alpha, Mu Phi Epsilon, SAI, and then there was a couple of other groups. They would collaborate with different things, both scholarship fundraisers and also social events. And this one article I thought was very interesting. They had a poverty party. And I thought, what is a poverty party? And it's pretty much what it sounds like. They would dress in raggedy clothes and get together and have a party and I guess look down and belittle poor people. And I found, was able to find, it was kind of a tradition at that time. And it was interesting, earlier observation about, you know, members being, I guess, upper class, upper middle class. And this kind of reminds me of every now and then Duke University up the road from where I live, they're in the news for fraternity parties that are, I think they had a wall party, you know, the border wall party, and, you know, other social events that are, I guess, insensitive in nature, but thought this was interesting. And again, you know, we talk about that period as being when, you know, our foundational values were established and the object, and I'm not, you know, belittling that at all, but it's interesting the other things that happened as well. You know, we've always known there was hazing, but to see, you know, minstrel shows, you know, and a poverty party taking place, you know, it's not something that we would might expect Major Henry Higginson, Carl Muck were elected National Honorary Membership 1915. Of course, Carl Muck was expelled 1919. There was another gentleman as well, his name slips my mind, but there's a lot of material you can read about Carl Muck and the Boston Symphony Orchestra and a lot of anti-German sentiment at that time. In fact, the Music News magazine, the big headline, the masthead said America First. But if you're interested in that, there's just Google Carl Muck arrest. And there's a lot out there on that. 1916, the Hellenic Society. Again, that was, I guess, the Greek Council, so to speak. Starting around the year 1916, 1917, the chapter started initiating dozens, probably over 100 chapter honorary members. And what was the rationale? I think in part it was, and I think this is in the Larimore list, that there was kind of a sense of competition, a fear that other organizations would recruit them. And if you look in the R&D group under the files, I have a copy of this list if you'd like to study it in detail. It's several pages of names. This is, and see how long the list is, and it's probably about 8 or 9 pages. Some of them are alpha, some of them are other chapters. It goes up to about 1935, 1940, but it's just a fascinating document to delve into. So these are some of the names from December of 1916. Archibald Davison, who was on faculty at Harvard, you sometimes see some of his choral arrangements. Edward Hill, whose grandfather was president of Harvard, composer Horatio Parker, two of Lowell Mason's grandsons, and Sousa, who, again, he was also initiated honorary at Alpha Z in 1925. Moving into 1917, January 8th, Peter Dykema was serving as national president of what is now NAFME, and he was editor of the Music Supervisors Journal at that time. And one thing I noticed, there were a lot of notable string players at that time that were elected to honorary membership. And it seems like the bulk, when you look at our famous Sinfonia list, the bulk of string players seem to be from around that time period, outside of Pablo Casals. You don't see a lot from more recent decades. So that's just something that I found interesting. Charles Seeger, who is father of Pete Seeger, he was initiated or elected to honorary membership in 1917. Composer John Alden Carpenter. Several music critics were initiated. And I keep saying initiated. I don't think many of these were initiated in the way, certainly in the way we think of today. I think for most of them, it's just simply an election to honorary membership. Rupert Hughes, who's uncle to Howard Hughes, was an honorary at that time. Theodore Presser, the music publisher. Charles Farnsworth, who was Dykema's predecessor at Teachers College at Columbia. Richard Dana, George Washington Brown were both patrons of the NEC. A distant relative of John Kerry, Alan Forbes was an honorary. Percy Grainger, we're familiar with. Galen Stone, who was a philanthropist. Rudolph Shermer. Moving into October 1917, the winner of the 1914 composition contest, Carnegie, Charles Schwab, who owned Bethlehem Steel, Enrico Caruso, Henry Clay Frick. If you're familiar with the Johnstown flood, he was, that event was attributed to his, failure in some ways. George Cadenhorn, Dr. Underwood wrote a good article about his role in kind of holding the fraternity together during World War I, and that article was incorporated into the Centennial History. All right, I'm gonna try to skim through. Charles Mills, who was an English-born organist, he later was at University of Wisconsin, and he helped launch the Phi chapter there. And some of these names of honoraries, I probably only have maybe 15-20% of those that are listed for Alpha, is just so many. Heifetz, he was only 16 when he was elected to honorary membership. Another thing I've noticed, there's a lot of internationally born honoraries from this time frame. You know, people talk about, you know, should we initiate people from other countries, other nations, but here you saw dozens of examples at this time. The chapter encourages singing in the army. It was a good good article to take a look at when you get a chance. I'll move on from that. There are a number of Boston Symphony Orchestra conductors who were initiated as honoraries. Higginson, Monteau, and Rachmaninoff. And I actually have a little Rachmaninoff statue that I found a few years ago. They were elected to honorary membership in 1919. And for some reason, their names, you never saw them in the list of famous symphonians. But a number of years ago, Bruce Gabor and John Bon Jovi ran across a letter in regards to Rachmaninoff's election. And so that's something that only kind of recently came to light. There's an article about Chadwick participating in an Alpha chapter meeting. And that was a good 20 some years after Sinfonia Club was launched. So Chadwick was there for a long time and he stayed involved for a long time. Justin Williams was the, from one perspective, he was the last Alpha initiate to serve as Supreme President. Mills died, of course, in 1920. And then Harrison Keller was one of the later directors of the conservatory that was a member. I think there's maybe one or two more that kind of came after this that was an Alpha initiate. He was director into the 40s and the 50s. So there's a room there at the conservatory named after him. And then Dykema was, of course, an honorary at New England Conservatory, Alpha. I haven't really been able to find any evidence of him attending anything there or being in town for anything. He was also an honorary at Beta Chapter, also charter member at Phi Chapter and national honorary. But you know, from one perspective, it's kind of like a transition with Williams, his 2 years, and the Dykema's years. It was kind of a transitionary time in the fraternity because you had the death of Mills in 1920, and you started to see a shift away from Alpha in terms of being one of the, you know, the core chapters, so to speak. It was still active for several more decades, but it wasn't, I guess, the hub, so to speak, that it had been for the first couple of decades. You started to see chapters like, you know, Iota at Northwestern and Alpha Nu at Eastman and others that kind of came about. You know, the Cincinnati chapters, they started to be, you know, the stronger presence in other parts of the countries, and thus you had stronger representation from those other chapters in the national leadership. And so that's kind of our stopping point with that those first 25 years. I did put together a few things, later known events. Charles Dawes, who was vice president, I think under Calvin Coolidge maybe, he was listed as an honorary member, Alpha member. I haven't seen much else about that, and I'm not saying it's not true, but I'm just saying I haven't really seen a whole lot of detail about that. Warren Story Smith, who was initiated in 1926, he actually taught Coretta Scott King when she was a student there. Chadwick died in 1931. Drayden, as I mentioned, committee man, he served national office from 1948 to 57. The last Alpha initiate involved formally at the national level. Daniel Pinkham, Vic Firth, I think those are the only really big names, more familiar names, the later decades. The chapter room, as you know, was in the 1970s, and that was part of what led to that. They were just in a really tight space crunch. They're just having to, just not a whole lot of room. And they eventually, you know, they built, you know, some other buildings there. But that happened, loss of the rooms in the 1970s. And I think that contributed to the inactive status. In part, you know, of course, you know, people, you know, we know that conservatories tend not to be at least modern conservatory tends not to be a friendly atmosphere for Greek letter groups. Inactive status in 1977. There was the reactivation period in the early 90s. And that's when I was in college and when I was CPR. And to be honest, I don't remember a whole lot. I remember when they were rechartered. And then I remember the CPR from Province 1 telling us at CPR convo one year that the chapter was struggling. And I think that was really about it. Kevin, do you remember much else about the chapter at that point, or anyone else that was around at that time, or Aaron? Do y'all remember ever meeting anybody or anything?
No, no one came to Tennessee Tech.
All right. So again, it was, you know, it was very short return. I think there was a brother from Zeta Psi, where I was from, that transferred there, I think was president, but I wasn't really in touch with him once he left ECU. Of course, the centennial was held there in 1998. And of course, we obtained the stained glass window fixture that's now at Lyrecrest North. And if I'm not mistaken, the former chapter room is now known as the Big Firth practice room. So at least there's that connection that is still there. So I wanted to thank David. I don't think he's on tonight, but John Peter, Mark Koperniak, who's not on, and Bill, they either provided some feedback or some additional materials that I was able to take a look at in putting this together. So anybody have any questions or thoughts or anything else they'd like to share? And I'll go ahead and close that out.
There should be a button up at the top of the screen that drops down from the menu that says stop share. I had a couple of comments. One is that Bill in the chat a little bit earlier mentioned the centennial that you had right at the end of the presentation there and spoke very positively of it when he sent me a message. The other thing was on the subject of the honorary chapter initiations that you talked about, especially those that happened prior to, it looked like in the early teens or so, the initiation into the Alpha chapter was very different than what we all perceive as the initiation ritual. I believe I was going through a ritual presentation with Brother Mongiovi once where he basically stood in front of us, asked us five questions and said, okay, you guys are now honorary members of the Alpha chapter. The initiation procedure was very different, which is why you'll see, you know, we're doing an initiation this week and we'll do another one a couple weeks from now. And then, you know, four more a month from now. So scheduling and putting on an initiation was a very different thing back then.
And I think some of this is covered in the article. I think some of those, or maybe even a majority of those, it was simply those honoraries that I mentioned. It was simply a matter of receiving a letter from the chapter saying you have been extended an invitation to honorary membership in Alpha chapter. Please reply if you accept. So they would send a letter back saying, yes, I accept. And I think they had an option of participating in some type of ceremony, like you mentioned, but there really wasn't a whole lot expected of them. Of course, you know, Carnegie, you know, he would have been like 79, 80 years old. And I think Higginson, there was a letter that they received that was in the magazine that he wrote back, said, yes, I accept the invitation. He may have been to concerts or shows or something. And I think his wife attended some, but not a whole lot of involvement. I think Dykema was probably, and Cadenhorn were the most extensively involved. And Cordelieu to an extent involved once they were, you know, were elected in as honoraries.
Excellent. So of course, this doesn't have to end the discussion or the questions. I just wanted to say another thank you to you, Brother Heath, for putting together this very, very eye-opening History of the Alpha chapter. So it's been really fantastic to see, you know, things that aren't just Ocean Everett Mills all the time, mm-hmm. things that aren't just Percy Jewett Burrell all the time. So thank you. That's a very interesting look, and I learned a lot from it, and I hope everybody else that is present tonight did as well. I also want to say thank you to everybody who attended this. I realized that when I was scheduling these things, I was trying to make it as friendly to as many different time zones as possible. So for those of us, especially here on the east side of the country, meeting for an Alpha Chapter history close to 10 p.m. probably isn't the ideal time. So thank you guys very much for being here for this. This has been pretty fantastic.
And I wanted to ask Bill and John Peter, did you have anything you wanted to share based on what you had shared with me? I know John Peter has done a lot of research on Chadwick, and I know I just kind of touched on him briefly. That Chadwick is probably a whole presentation in and of itself. John Peter, anything? Do I now?
That I mentioned I had seen some periodicals, and I don't have a link to them. Sorry, but it was obvious that some of the initial members were already alumni by the time Centennial formed, and. You could see a lot of the names that show up over a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything Chadwick specific, John Peter?
Your mic is currently muted, John Peter.
There we go. The space bar keeps moving on me. But one thing that I found out about Chadwick through a lot of research with him is that he was a lot more influential than we've kind of been led to believe, with Mon Jovi being shoving Ashen and Burrell down our throats a lot. Not saying that they're not important, but there was a lot with Chadwick. I know in the Fawcett biography, Fawcett actually speaks about the club that Chadwick was a member of in Leipzig, and gives some direct quotes from Chadwick's life about how Chadwick recalls that when they would meet, they would get together and they would have a few pints, or they would have a few beers in Germany, in Leipzig there. And he would write, after about an hour, they would break into about 6-8-part harmony, and they would just meet and talk about music. And one thing that I did post in the chat, that if you were looking, that John had, that the other John had mentioned, was about the roles and the men playing of women. And there was a large tradition of that already going on in Boston through the Boston Men's Army Cadets, which, if you're familiar with Chadwick's grand burlesque opera of Tabasco, that was originally written for the Boston Men's Army Cadets. And so that tradition was very strong in Boston, and the Boston public loved it.
Thank you.
With the use of men as women in plays and such, that's for the time period, that's just what happened. That wouldn't be allowed now, mm-hmm. with certain differences, but mm-hmm. that was just how it was done at the point. The same with the minstrel shows. Yes, wish in hindsight, yeah, that's kind of icky. But for the time, and that's where we have to put in the understanding that for that time period, this was the norm.
Mm.
In this time period, that would fly like a lead balloon.
Mm.
And that's what some people just don't remember.
Yeah, kind of like hazing. I know there's, I've seen different articles about hazing from that time period. Of course, then we talked, they talked about that in our official publications. Right. But I do think the minstrel shows, you know, that's something else. I think, you know, at some point it'll be important to acknowledge. So.
Yes, it happened. Yeah, it kind of shouldn't have. But that was a norm. I'm not a revisionist. Please understand that. I think it was dumb. But it happened.
It reminds me of some disclaimers that I see before Walt Disney cartoons from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s that say, we're not necessarily proud that this is our history, but we're also not going to erase it. We are going to put a disclaimer, put an asterisk before all of these cartoons saying, if we knew then what we know now, this wouldn't have happened. This is a product of the time and environment in which it was created.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think, Keith, thank you for your comment. I've been trying to scroll these, you know, sharing a variety of perspectives. And I agree because, you know, I really don't have, you know, I'm very interested in all this stuff, but I don't really have an agenda. I don't have any kind of, I'm not trying to push a particular narrative. You know, one of the biggest things is the whole social versus professional conversation, you know, and please realize I'm not belittling those who have strong feelings about it either way. But when I look through the history, I see strands and elements of social. I see strands and elements of professional. Sometimes those were highlighted more so in some periods than others, but I also see a lot of them side by side. For example, the food functions for fratters, which were these banquets, dinner, breakfast, luncheons, that were held at national events and regional MT&A and MENC. And as we see, you know, Dykema and some of those that were very, you know, some may credit them with turning things professional or starting down that road, but they were also, when I read Dykema's biography, he was very social in many ways. So I agree that we should have, you know, it's important to have a variety of perspectives and respect a variety of viewpoints. So, in fact, Dykema said at an MT&A convention in the late 30s, I think it was, he was given a speech about the value of Greek letter music organizations, and he even said that depending on which chapter you were in of Sinfonia, some took a social approach, some took a professional approach, and some took a more like a Pi Kappa Lambda honorary approach. He wasn't saying that was right or wrong or whatever, just saying the reality at that time. So
I think also when you have the first, you know, handful of chapters taking place at conservatories, isn't it pretty much assumed that everybody within those chapters would be a professional musician someday?
I could just share from some experience, because I actually attended three different schools that have chapters. And at some point, a chapter might decide we're being too loose and we need to be a little more serious, right? And sometimes it would be exactly the other way around. And that's all fine. The chapter can do that, or sometimes it might be imposed on them. But what I wanted to caution is not to go too far either in one direction or another, to make an adjustment and see how that is.
Bill, I think that's one of the most important reasons that we need to make sure that our alumni are involved on some level. Personally, I have been active within Province 2 for 18 years now, and I have seen at many of the 11 chapters that we have within our province exactly what you've described. Things go back and forth. There was one point where Beta Iota chapter at my initiating chapter at Albion College was up to 40 members, which meant that 2.5% of the students on their campus were in Sinfonia. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they have five brothers. So the ebb and flow. It's natural for when it goes one way too far, it starts to slowly correct itself. But sometimes, as you pointed out, if you lean too far in a direction, you need somebody to come in and sort of right the ship, as it were.
Yeah.
That was something that Brother Sperry mentioned in his talk during the last session when he took on his role as the interim executive director. He went back to his own chapter and said, "Hey, I know you guys are doing this. You need to stop it."
Sometimes it's feast or famine, and just from having a number of brothers graduate and new ones come in, there could be quite a big difference in just a year or so.
Most definitely.
All right, so I'm going to thank you all again for, or thank you, Dave, first of all, for offering this opportunity. This is something I've been kind of thinking about for a while. At some point, you know, I'd like to do, I have done sessions on the songbook, and Dave, for those who don't know him, David Eltz, he needs to do the next songbook. He has done a wonderful job of taking some of these obscure, Dykema songs that I found and made them into TBB arrangements. Some of the old songbook songs that were outdated in some ways, he's help create new lyrics to make them relevant to today. So maybe sometime a session on the songbook. And of course, also, like I mentioned, some of the mid-century personalities like Dykema and Harry Robert Wilson that I've been very interested in terms of research, maybe, you know, a session on those lines, either within, under this umbrella or, you know, independently. So.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again, John, for the wonderful presentation. I did want to let everybody know, and it may have gotten a little bit buried. I actually posted 3 posts last night. One of them was the links for tonight's meeting. One of them was a resource from yesterday's sessions. The third was actually an invitation to all brothers. I would like to do one final session where there's no presentation. It is simply, "Hey boys, let's get together." That is going to take place Friday at 8 p.m. I have already shared the link on the Synophnian, and I am asking all brothers to please repost, try to get this out to as many brothers as possible. On Monday night, the former CPRs got together and we had some pretty fantastic conversations up until about, well, it was a little after midnight my time, so I didn't feel particularly well Tuesday morning. Lack of sleep, I swear, that's the only reason. Regardless, I will post it again tonight. I will post it again tomorrow. I will post it again Friday. I want to see as many guys here as possible. That should be a really good time.
Okay, brothers, also, I've recorded the last 2 sessions. I am hoping that it's 2 recordings, not 1. If it is, I have tools to split it. I will clean it up a little bit as needed and post links as I am able to upload. Yes, Dave.
I can verify that there should be 2 separate recordings. I have a little light on my screen here that says recording right now. That light went off in between the 2 sessions.
Oh, thank goodness. I don't want to try to do video editing.
Nobody blames you.
I mean, I've got the machine that can do it, but it's not running Windows or Mac.
Just because you America can doesn't mean you America should.
Oh, I hate Windows. I'm a Windows admin.